Our next case is Sig Sauer, Inc. v. NST Global, LLC. Mr. Caviar, did I pronounce it correctly?
Caviar, just like
Caviar. Okay. I didn't want to go there, but, you know. Mr. Caviar, let's see. You have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, sir.
And Councillor Maxie Fisher, you have reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal to Sig Sauer's main presentation. You also have a cross appeal here, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, let's continue on. You may proceed.
Thank you for hearing this case, and may it please the court. Sig Sauer is appealing the construction and application of two claim terms that each show up in the two below IPR proceedings. Those terms are elastomeric material and buffer tube. Now, these terms relate to components of an accessory for a firearm, namely a forearm stabilizing attachment that can be used to assist someone to shoot single-handedly, and especially in conditions where the gun might otherwise be one that needs two hands to aim, even if it's a handgun. Now, with respect to elastomeric material, and to some extent also with the buffer tube limitation, it seems as if the board almost went backwards in the order of evidence and started almost with the extrinsic evidence and then worked backwards. Here for buffer tube...
So a very basic question here is, what is elastomeric? Is that an adjective or is that a noun?
Elastomeric is an adjective, and it's defined...
It's describing a class of materials that have certain characteristics?
So it's sort of like elastic is used to describe natural rubber, and elastomeric is used to describe elastomers. So it has a similar sort of implication, and it implies the sort of resilience and as well as the ability to, you know, take stress and return to a pretty rigid shape as well.
My understanding is that the interpretation you want for elastomeric material is basically a material that is resilient, has resilient properties.
Based on the disclosure and the specification, that seems to be how they consider the term elastomeric material, and so that's, yes, we want to be consistent with those disclosures.
Okay, and then, but what do we do with the prosecution history when it originally described these materials as made of resilient material, and then those application claims got rejected over the prior art, and then to overcome the prior art rejection, they deleted the term resilient material and replaced it with elastomeric material, and then explained how the prior art references arguably resilient, but they're not elastomeric, and then the claims were allowed. And so therefore, we're kind of compelled, we're channeled by that prosecution history into a conclusion that whatever elastomeric material is, it cannot be resilient material. It's not the same thing.
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that's an argument that was raised by opposing counsel. And, you know, frankly, I'd like to take a moment and maybe answer it when I come back for my second set, because I have not considered that in detail, Your Honor. I would say, however, that the specification is filled with references to resilience and to... resilience and equating that to elastomeric. And also, there are interchangeable uses of the term rigid with non-elastomeric. The problem about how this construction played out was, with Forgeot, the board didn't think it disclosed an elastomeric material because it was made of metal, preferably made of metal. And they also took an analysis of sort of the flexibility of it, and they thought it was kind of thick. But when they looked at Morgan, they distinguished Morgan entirely on being rigid. And so there wasn't the same thought of, well, what about the quality here? I mean, we're talking about a rigid material, but it's clearly a plastic-type material and should suggest to a person of ordinary skill that similar types of material would be available. And in fact, that's part of the explanations that were ignored by the board a bit later on in terms of the motivation to combine Forgeot with Morgan.
And I guess my understanding of the board's reasoning was that the combination that you were proposing, whatever resulting combination of Forgeot with Morgan, would create an attachment where the flaps were had some elasticity to it. And the board concluded, well, that is not the right understanding of elastomeric material. And so whatever obviousness thing that you've created, it's not mapped onto the claimed invention, which because elastomeric material is not something that merely has some degree of elasticity, it is something else that because elasticity and resilience, I mean, we're going back to my earlier point about the prosecution history where the claims, the applicant renounced a claim scope that's broad enough that it's just material that is resilient.
If I'm understanding Your Honor's question correctly,
that there's a distinction between elasticity and elastomeric. I understand
yes.
These words sound the same, and it's a subtle difference, but it's a very well, important difference for purposes of this claimed invention, especially given the prosecution history. And I could have swore the board referred to it in its board decision. But can you speak to that? The board's identified distinction between these two things, and it's too loose to create a combination with materials that have some elasticity and say that that's something made of elastomeric material.
Well, the one of the problems here is that in the board's decision, as I understood it, the primary basis they had for relying on that distinction between elastic and elastomeric was the testimony of Dr. Harrison. And so that, to us, was insufficient to support changing the meaning of it as evident in the specification. And I will review very quickly over the time my counsel sister speaking to answer the other questions regarding the prosecution history, but I presume there's a similar
I would point you and your co-counsel to A20 of the board's decision, bottom paragraph.
Well, Your Honor, I thank you. It is coming back to me a little bit. Even if the construction of elastomeric was both the material and the quality, then that's the wrong result here as well, because applying that definition, it was inconsistently applied. So even if that's the correct interpretation, it wasn't the board didn't provide one that included both concepts of ability and of the material. So another problem with the analysis on elastomeric material is that the board specifically identified a single motivation to combine Morgan and Forgeot. And in doing so...
Keep going.
And in doing so, excluded a number of other pieces of both testimony and evidence presented by Six Hour on other ways and reasons for combining. And I could... It's in the briefing, but I could, read some out. Mr. Nixon testified that the use of elastomeric materials was very well known, that metal in particular are known to be elastomeric, that there's in fact an elasticity test, standardized test for metals, and that using these in the device of Forgeot is just a substitution of one element for another to yield a predictable result. And it could have been motivated by cost, availability, materials, ease of manufacture, user comfort.
When I looked at Mr. Nixon's testimony in the record about elastomeric materials, it seemed pretty clear to me that his commentary about elastomeric materials was premised on understanding elastomeric materials to be merely materials with some elasticity. Is that a fair understanding of Mr. Nixon's testimony? I think that's the way the board understood Mr. Nixon's testimony. And then, therefore, if that turns out to be an incorrect understanding of elastomeric material, then there's a flaw in the model, the obviousness model that Mr. Nixon is proposing.
Sure, and I understand that point, Your Honor. I guess I would return to the fact that even if that's the case, and Mr. Nixon missed part of this equation, and he focused entirely on the elasticity or the flexibility or resilience and not on the actual polymer material. I don't think that changes the outcome here because it was still inconsistently applied. And the board's construction doesn't exactly say that, right? I mean, the board's construction says elastomeric material equals an elastomer, and they went pretty...
I thought one of your strong arguments was that there's an error in the construction involving elastomer, and you seem to be talking your way out of this. I mean, is there an error in the construction or not?
I'm sorry?
Is there an error in the construction or not?
Yes, Your Honor, there is.
Well, tell us why.
At the very least, elastomeric material needs to refer to the quality of an elastomer. And those qualities include...
And did you provide evidence in that regard?
Yes. In fact, the specification talks about the quality and ability of elastomeric materials on... it's A157 in columns 3, 40 to 43. In appendix A148, column 3, 33 to 35, then there's a fair amount of interchangeable use between the term elastomeric and semi-rigid, and that also supports that those are important concepts, that they're linked, and they're part and parcel of one another. And similarly, the board also did a the patentee also had an interchangeable use of the words rigid and non-elastomeric.
So I think another point that in the claim construction that the board said that they didn't adopt your version, it's because of the you were relying on dictionaries that were not within the field of art, correct?
They didn't rely on the dictionary, I think, because it was late produced, but they may have also mentioned that.
No, the dictionary that you produced.
Yes, late produced by us, correct.
Can you say something about that?
I mean, we were responding to, arguments that were being made, and we're not standing on the need to introduce that piece of evidence, and we're not basing our construction entirely on that dictionary definition. For us, it really comes down to what is in the specification and what is being described as the type of material that needs to be used in this type of, article. So in addition to misunderstanding that there were other motivations to combine, I believe that the board also presumed that Transco was almost the entire basis for Nixon's statements on how, plastics with elasticity are elastomeric materials. I don't know if Nixon ever went as broad as Judge Shen suggested, because there are statements where Nixon tries to talk it more about it more in terms of plastics, but I don't think it really matters for the outcome here because of these gaping missing elements in the analysis.
You are in your rebuttal time.
Oh, I would like to. Thank you.
Councillor Fisher. So you've divided your time into, you're going to now address for 12 minutes, and then you have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Okay. You have divided your 15 minutes into 12 and 3 minutes. 3 minutes is for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Brittany Maxey Fisher, and I'm here with my colleague Stacey Trammell on behalf of NST Global patent owner. And we believe that the board construed the terms elastomeric material and buffer tube correctly. The board walked through the correct analysis, beginning with the intrinsic evidence.
So let me start by asking you the same question I asked your friend. Is elastomer, is that an adjective or is that a noun?
So, elastomeric material is a type of material, and it's so elastomeric is defining the type of material.
There is no one type of material that's elastomer, right?
Elastomer is a material that has a rubber-like polymer.
So elastomer describes types of materials.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that would make it an adjective.
Elastomeric material, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So elastomeric material is referencing a class of materials?
Elastomeric material references the flaps, if we look at...
Yes, in the claim, but I'm just saying, ordinarily, you know, out in industry, trying to understand what this is. Is that a recognized, understood class of materials? You said something like rubber-like polymer.
Yes,
And so what I'm trying to figure out is, are there chemists or somebody out there that say, when they use the term elastomeric material, they're necessarily referring to, okay, we're talking about a certain kind, a class of polymers out there, and it's a rubber-like type of polymer.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. The board also, in the extrinsic evidence, looked to a chemical definition that stated elastomer is a polymer with properties similar to natural rubber. And the board relied upon that extrinsic evidence, as well as Your Honor stated, the narrowing of the claim from resilient material to elastomeric material in order to overcome the prior art. Owen was a rigid ski pole, and in order to overcome that, we went from resilient material to elastomeric material. In the specification...
A ski pole is resilient material?
Everything can be resilient to an extent. And so this was a rigid ski pole, but it still has some sort of resiliency. So we went to elastomeric material.
When you watch Olympic skiing, the ski poles tend to bend at times. All right. Okay.
So we believe that the board correctly, they performed the correct analysis, and we believe that elastomeric material and buffer tube were both applied correctly. Where we believe that the board erred is in the board's surprise preamble claim limitations in its final written decision.
This is your cross appeal, you know?
Yes, Your Honor, okay. Unless there's any other questions.
On the cross appeal, the other side points out that there were actually two separate identified reasons for finding the secondary consideration evidence to be unpersuasive. Number one was this nexus question of the relationship, given the way they construed the preamble in a way that, as you say, was a surprise. But the second and separate ground was that when they reviewed the submitted evidence, it was quite clear to the board that the reason why people were buying your commercial product was because it permitted shouldering. And obviously that's not a permissible way of using this kind of attachment. And it had nothing to do with any novel features of your patented attachment. And so for that reason, the commercial success doesn't actually relate to the claimed invention. Can you respond to that?
Yes, Your Honor. In the final written decision, the board stated that the secondary considerations were not met because patent owner had not produced evidence of the forearm stabilizing attachment and the handgun and the support structure. Yes, you can look at a specific feature of the claimed invention in order to provide secondary considerations, but you also have the opportunity to look at the invention as a whole. And had patent owner knew that the board was going to raise this preamble claim limitation, patent owner would have submitted evidence of the stabilizing attachment and the handgun, or sales and evidence and arguments, and the handgun and the support structure.
How does that get over the fact, though, that all of the statements that were submitted touting the attachment were devoted to the idea that, hey, now we can shoulder these hand pistols, and isn't that great? So in that way, I don't see how any second round of opening the record is going to help you, given that the record as is already indicates that regardless of how the claim is defined, there's a gap in the connection between the evidence submitted and the claim, however it is construed. Could you respond to that? You didn't respond to that in your opening brief, and obviously the other side pointed that out in their yellow brief.
Yes, Your Honor. So when we look at secondary considerations, it is a part of the obviousness analysis, and the obviousness analysis is incomplete if secondary considerations aren't looked at. Here, patent owner did not have the notice or opportunity that we should have supplied evidence with the handgun support structure and the stabilizing attachment. We did not have notice that the preambles were going to be read as limiting until the first question from the board to my friend on the other side was whether or not they believed the preambles were limiting, and they said they didn't address that in the briefings. We also find that the board erred in the underlying obviousness analysis regarding the motivation to combine. The board, in its final written decision, relied upon a misquote of Morgan. It stated that the arm support helps steady the handgun, or steady the arm for firing, and actually it's the apparatus. If we look at the element numbers, it's not the arm support itself. There are multiple supports on Morgan, and there's four different elongated supports along with a barrel, U-shaped barrel rest at the end of the apparatus, and the gun just sits in the apparatus as a whole. So what Morgan states in its specification is that the apparatus as a whole aids in the firing of the firearm. We also believe that the board misinterpreted the scope and content of Forgeot when it read time completely out of the Forgeot patent. The entire pain point that Forgeot was attempting to solve is to develop a mechanism that would be quicker than shouldering a weapon, because prey are fast and underwater movements are slow. So in order to ensure that you capture the prey, you would want to, they developed a device that would be quicker than shouldering. Time, rapid, fast, along with rigid, are throughout the patent. So we believe that the board erred when it read out the intended, one of the intended purposes of time was not taught by Forgeot. We also believe that the board's determination of unintended slipping contradicts the plain language of Forgeot. Forgeot, petitioner's expert stated in his supplemental declaration that there could be the possibility of unintended slipping, but not that there would. And many of his statements were related to misuse of the actual Forgeot apparatus. Forgeot itself, it is a metal rigid cuff that has some elasticity, enough elasticity to be able to bend the ends. And there's a screw in Forgeot that it's screw 3. That screw must be on the device in order to attach the stabilizing, the cuff to the support structure. And Forgeot states in its specification that at the same time the screw is turned, the opening closes for the cuff. It then goes on to state that if it's not secure enough, the user, because of the certain elasticity, can bend the ends of the metal, forming a clamp. Forgeot states that it's an absolute connection, and so if you look at the plain reading of Forgeot, there it does not ever talk about any sort of unintended slipping. It says that it's a perfect and absolute connection that's extremely rigid with the user's forearm. We believe that taking the strap from Morgan and adding that strap into Forgeot is we're basically taking our device and turning it into a building block. And because of the secondary considerations and the opportunity that they provide to guard against hindsight, patent owner feels like we did not have the opportunity for this. This strap would add a third element to Forgeot when we already have a rigid cuff that has the screw that closes, and then the metal can form a clamp around the arm. We do not feel like that there's a motivation to combine Morgan in view of Forgeot. Your Honors, I would ask that the elastomeric, the claim construction regarding the elastomeric material and the claim construction regarding the buffer tube be affirmed. I would ask that the obviousness determination regarding the board's inaccurate reasoning and its reaching the necessary factual findings be reversed. And I would ask that the preamble limitations, the surprise preamble limitations be reversed because petitioner never had the opportunity to address this issue. And I would like to say that our dependent claims stood, and right now, as we stand here today, if the board's decision stays, patent owner is left with less rights than without petitioner even having to ask, because the obviousness analysis is a completely separate construct than the preamble limitation claim construction. So without the petitioner even having to request it, our dependent claims for elastomeric and buffer tube have been severely limited. We would also request it regarding secondary considerations that the board reverse or at a minimum vacate and remand to provide the patent owner the opportunity to supply evidence and argument and a meaningful opportunity to respond. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank you. Mr. Carrier, you have, I'm going to restore your time to 5 minutes so that you can respond to the cross appeal.
Thank you,
as well.
Judge Chen, to follow up on
your mask off.
Yes, sir. Judge Chen, to follow up on the question that you had before the break. We did not brief this in the between the parties. Obviously, it's an overview. What I would submit is that essentially what I said before, that there still are, even if you accept the board's construction, there still are major errors in the application, including whether it was considered in combination with various other references. NST has made some comments that I do not believe they understand are incorrect. For example, at the hearing, while there was an instant where Attorney Schultz said, yeah, it's not in the briefing, I don't remember. Then later on, it's A3039 at lines 24 to 26. He says it's limiting. So he comes back further on in the hearing, and he confirms that it's limiting. Now, to the issue of whether it was...
When you say it's limiting, what is...
Preamble.
The preamble is limiting. And when you say Attorney Schultz, who's that?
He's the attorney who argued before the board. He's the attorney who argued before the board.
On whose behalf?
6 hours.
Okay.
The reference that was made by NST was the reference to Attorney Schultz speaking during the board hearing.
Okay.
So while Attorney Schultz at the board hearing on behalf of Sig Sauer indicated that at the beginning he wasn't quite sure whether it was an issue, he said, no, we do believe it's limiting. And as to the issue whether it needs to be briefed, under O2 Micro and its subsequent cases, I do not believe it has to be briefed unless it's disputed. So at the outset of this case, and what's not contained in NST's brief, is that Sig Sauer expressly in its petitions pointed out how Forgeot met the preamble. And then the board, in its institution decision, acknowledged that and said, okay, we see that Sig's asserting this, and we don't see that NST's opposing it. That was the first opportunity, and that's the first notice they had that this was a live issue. So I don't think there's anything inappropriate about a lack of construction where everyone's in agreement. Again, you know, I do not know how the holding with respect to the secondary considerations on the notion that even considering these references, it shows a different reason for commercial success of the commercial embodiments. I don't understand how that can be characterized as anything less than a holding. It was provided in over multiple pages. It considered a wide array of evidence, and it was done for the purposes of completeness, so that if and when we came before this court, we would be able to discuss all of these issues at the same time. Also, I don't understand, and it's not been suggested, what additional information are they going to submit? Because from our perspective, they gathered all of the articles that showed a claim and success and all of that, and they submitted them. They're not going to find, you know, articles that additionally talk about other features. Those are the articles, Your Honor. So You know, I'm not entirely sure what evidence is going to happen here. And you know, for that matter, it hasn't really been explained, you know, what's going to happen on secondary considerations, you know, when it goes down and how they're going to actually dispute that. With respect to that substantial evidence supported findings, we do not believe that NST considered all of the evidence supporting obviousness. Essentially, where we've attacked the board's decisions, for the most part, we've attacked things that are erroneous as a matter of law and not things that would be subject to, let's look at all the evidence together. With respect to NST's arguments, I think primarily they're trying to reweigh a lot of the evidence, and they're not identifying things that singularly and in and of themselves would be sufficient to cause a remand or reversal. In addition, the notion that unintended slipping was raised later is also something that's difficult for me to understand. The title of this patent is a forearm, you know, gripping stabilizing attachment. All of the disclosures, all we're dealing with here is a device that's going to prevent things like unintended slipping. I mean, there's nothing else that this device is designed for than to secure it. And so maybe the term unintended slipping in quotes wasn't introduced till later, but the concepts are all there. And Mr. Nixon put in earlier in his declaration, he talked about perturbations. He's from Ireland, so he uses words that might not be as common here. But he's talking exactly about unintended movement and unintended slipping. So, I guess I do believe that the entire invention is directed to this concept.
What about the idea that Forgeot's cuff is made of metal and it's got a screw in it, and so it's plenty secure, don't need a strap?
Well, there's nothing wrong with making something that's not as secure. There's plenty of reasons why people do that all the time. They want to save money. They want to produce it quicker. They ran out of supplies. And prior art is prior art for all it teaches. So there still would be, as we pointed out, any number of motivations to consider alternative materials. And so frankly, if Your Honor, if you are also in agreement that the cuff and Forgeot is a sort of a non-starter, then it is still well within the knowledge of a person of ordinary skill to say, okay, let's not go with a metal cuff, let's go with a plastic cuff. I mean, you know, I believe these are very simple substitutions, and they would have been quite obvious to a person of skill at the time of the invention.
Okay, I think we have your argument. Councilor Fisher, you have 3 minutes to rebut just the counter appeal, just the cross appeal issues that he addressed, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
And no other material.
Thank you, Your Honors. So regarding the comment that that petitioner had stated the preamble limitations, that's inaccurate. They had stated that the preamble is met by Forgeot, which is a separate different construct. That's a subject matter issue. Petitioner never said that the preambles of our claim read life, meaning in vitality, into the body. They never said that the body of our claim was not a complete structure. That was never said. None of this was brought up. The petition controls, and Dell versus Acceleron and Nike versus Adidas both stated that a claim construction being brought up in oral argument is too late. We also are not requesting that the evidence be reweighed. We're saying that the evidence it's an incomplete analysis from the board. That's what we're speaking of. And if there's nothing else, Your Honors, I will rest.
No, thank you. We thank the parties for their arguments this morning on this case, which will be taken under advisement.